I was able to be in one of the first classes of women at the Naval Academy that allowed women to compete to become combat fighter pilots because of one big reason: an election.
It's just excitement, really. And from the first day of this campaign, we were focused on the people in this congressional district in Arkansas.
In the book of Esther, there's a verse that reminds us that we were born for such a time as this.
Another primary Tuesday is in the books for 2018. For notable results from last night, we turn to Daniel Strauss, politics writer for Politico. Daniel, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So big news coming out of Georgia. Stacey Abrams won the Battle of the Stacys. She won the Democratic primary for governor. She is now the first Black woman to win the nomination of a major party for governor ever. Tell us about her win.
Yeah, and it's a pretty remarkable win. This is not a super friendly state for Democrats. Georgia hasn't had a major statewide Democratic win in over a decade. And the other important thing to note about Abrams is that she invested heavily in field staff and building a campaign infrastructure on the ground early on, which is somewhat unheard of in politics and primary politics. Usually campaigns will spend more money on advertising to reach voters. But Abrams' thesis for winning both the nomination and the whole race is that there is an untapped pool of voters throughout Georgia that she can reach, and that will catapult her to the governor's mansion.
And does she have a chance in the general election? I mean, with given all this momentum?
I mean, look, it is Georgia and it is a red state, but the difference in votes between how many people voted in the Republican primary and how many people voted in the Democratic primary was a little more than 50,000, which is pretty good. So it's still an uphill battle, and Republicans are looking at a runoff between two of the top vote getters in the GOP primary, which is helpful for Abrams because she can spend the next few weeks raising money and getting ready to face whoever comes out of that runoff while Republicans duke it out with each other.
And Stacey Abrams is not alone. We also saw Lupe Valdez became the first Latina to win a major party nomination for Texas governor. What can you tell us about that race?
Yeah, I mean, look, that was a bit of a surprise to us. It was a very under-the-radar race. Valdez is the former Dallas County sheriff, and she is a Latina running for office. She faced Andrew White, the son of a former governor of Texas, in the runoff. And I think it's fair to say that women's rights groups are pretty excited about Valdez. She was the more liberal candidate in the primary, and this is the second time in the past few cycles that we've seen a prominent Democratic woman reach the nomination for governor, the last one being Wendy Davis. But look, it's a much harder battle for Valdez in Texas than it is for Abrams in Georgia. Texas Governor Greg Abbott has a very large war chest. He's very popular, and he is ready to campaign for re-election here. I think it's a much more difficult climb for Valdez.
Now, I'm curious, you know, we, with Stacey Abrams' win and other wins, you know, Black women have been credited with helping Democrats, including Doug Jones, beat Roy Moore in last year's Senate race. You know, there's the sort of Black Twitter line of listen to Black women in order to get ahead. Did they play a role here too? And what role will we see Black women and more largely women of color playing in these general elections?
I think what we're seeing right now is the sense among campaigns that Black women are that pool of voters. And every time a candidate who has that support gets a nomination or wins a campaign, it shows to other campaigns and party strategists that this is a potent pool and it's something that should be focused on in campaigning and voter registration early on in a cycle.
And obviously, these were not the only two races. There were many others. What is the sort of overall takeaway that we saw from these primary elections?
Essentially that Democrats are more interested in establishment-aligned candidates than fire breathers. We saw in multiple areas, I'm thinking Clark Tucker in Arkansas's 2nd Congressional District, Colin Allred in Texas, that Democrats are pretty interested in candidates who are not overly liberal and come off as center-left or can appeal to a broad base in a general election.
Well, we'll see if that strategy pans out for the Democrats. But on the Republican side, what did we see yesterday?
Well, what we saw in Texas last night was a rise of Club for Growth candidates. Look at Chip Roy, Senator Ted Cruz's former chief of staff, who was endorsed and beat out Matt McCall, a businessman, for his congressional seat. So look, on this side, we're seeing a group of Republicans come in who are closely aligned with a very, very specific slice of the GOP, a slice that focuses on lower taxes. And this is comes at a time when there are 6 members of the Texas congressional delegation who are Republicans who are resigning or retiring. Ted Poe, Jeb Hensarling, Lamar Smith, Blake Farenthal, these are big names among congressional Republicans and Texas Republicans. And finally, we also saw Bunny Pounds, the candidate endorsed by Vice President Mike Pence, failing to cross the finish line, which is pretty significant because Pence is usually the endorsement that everyone in the party really wants to get. But Pounds was defeated by State Rep Lance Gooden, and that was by a pretty narrow margin. But it does prove that Pence is not the silver bullet for candidates who want Trump administration support but are wary of even getting support from the president himself.
Daniel Strauss is a politics writer for Politico. Daniel, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.